Hello, everyone. It's Madge. I'm only talking right now because I want to see how it sounds without any filters. And I would like you to enjoy this following podcast. And so I changed it. I'm not using the filter I normally use. And I just wanted to see how it sounds using my normal electro voice, RE27 Donkey microphone. And we're going to have a very nice show. I don't know if I should play the song first. Yeah, I'll play the song first because I don't have the voicemail all queued up. So I'll. Yeah.
Come with me, my little lesbian. Come with me, my little lesbian. I want to show you heaven. It's in the palm of my hand. It's called Jim Baby. So come with me, my little lesbian. I'll show you heaven. Lesbian, lesbian. How many lesbians does it take to screw the light bulb? Just one. Lesbians are clever. How many lesbians does it take to change a tire? Just one. Lesbians are clever. Come with me, my little lesbian. Be my little lesbian.
Hi, Madge. It's Viola Volterine, and I was listening to your recent podcast where you were talking about having a nostalgia for non-synchronous communication. And let me tell you, I can totally relate. I've always preferred it, first because I'm soft-spoken and I tend to get talked over in a lot of conversations. But besides that, I take my time in listening to what others say and processing it, and I find that it takes a while for a thought or a response to make its way to that part of my brain that generates vocal sounds. So at any rate, I'm sending you a recording as requested because I fully support this mode of communication. It's definitely my native mode of communication. So you may recognize my voice. Back in the day, you would have known me as Art Vamp or Echo or Stripsada or any number of other different names. It's been a while and a lot has changed. About 2 years ago, I was diagnosed with DID, that's dissociative identity disorder. They used to call it good old-fashioned multiple personalities. Yeah, so I'm cuckoo crazy pants. DID is usually the result of a prolonged or repetitive trauma as a child, typically under the age of 9, which is me all over. And anyway, to get to the point, the many names that I used to go by weren't just me playing at becoming Ziggy Stardust or something like that. Through therapy, I've found that I actually am multitudes, and I'm not just playing different roles. But for the most part, you won't be able to tell that I'm all that much different than singletons. It's not something that's really apparent, despite all the ridiculous Hollywood representations with the costume changes and the radical voice changes. That's just very rare in DID. The real reason I wanted to send this is because of your conversations about masks with the person on Twitter and hearing how you handled that. First, bravo for being one of the few real human beings willing to actually consider that their perspective might be wrong, even if I agree with you entirely. I mean, I totally agree with what you were saying. But this weird thing has happened to me. Once I used to want to listen and be fair to people. You yourself even criticized me once for not decrying that moron Dr. Death right out of the gate. And instead, I found it fascinating that a person could be so convinced of their superior intelligence that they would ignore mounds of evidence. Just to be clear, I was never convinced by his arguments, but something about the way I talked about him, acknowledging his dedication to the fallacy, rubbed you the way wrong way at some point, I remember. That was just me being a true Libra, trying to find fairness in the way I talk about people. But something has happened to me as I age. My Aries moon has risen, my friend. I think probably it has something to do with perimenopause and the high cortisol levels that come with it. I've noticed it in other women approaching 50. It makes you fat and less willing to put up with other people's bullshit. I kind of have a new way of being. I like to say I'm a good person, but I'm not a very nice person. I embrace the bitch in me. And case in point about the now aging Gen X woman, my new hero is journalist Mona Altahawi, and she greets each new day with the mantra, fuck the patriarchy, and takes glee in rubbing misogynists the wrong way. The other day when she was asked if she hates men, she replied, no, just you, kitten. I love her so much. I recently read her book, Seven Necessary Sins for Women and Girls, in which she mentions anger as one of our strengths. The sins she said we should embrace are anger, attention, profanity, ambition, power, violence, and lust. And I'm finally at a point in life where I allow myself to feel real and justified rage. And I'm not about to set that aside for some rando on social media. So I'm in a different place. When I find that there's nothing that's going to sway the other person away from conspiracies, which, when taken apart, are quite obviously ridiculous, I have no problem dismissing them as stupid and even mocking them with great venom. I've stopped caring about stupid people's feelings, which is, for me, a liberation after a lifetime of trying to be fair and kind with those who don't deserve it. Fuck being the only grown-up in the room. I did grow up, and I've grown into a raging bitch. Deal with it. In that same vein, I've taken to harassing harassers until they give up and go away. It's my new pastime. I have an excess of anger to throw at anyone, usually cis straight men, who threaten me. Recently, a guy threatened to knife rape me for clapping back at him about his views on male superiority. And I sent an army of people to harass him until he shut down all of his social media accounts. I count that as a victory. It feels pretty good. And so maybe I've become a true Americunt, ready to go to war with my fellow citizens at the drop of a hat. And I'm kind of okay with it. It's a righteous war. I'm not warlike in my personal relationships. I know how to communicate without violence where it counts. But as for all the rest, fuck 'em. Speaking of reading, I'm also reading a book called Burn It Down. It's a collection of manifestos and essays by feminists, and it has lit a fire beneath me. So while I find your kindness and your sanity really refreshing, I'm just not there. I can't be. I hit a breaking point, and I'm allowing myself to embrace the crazy. Meanwhile, I started my own podcast about a year ago. It's called Obedient Love, and it's made specifically for submissive straight men, men into BDSM. And I put straight in quotes there because 90% of them will suck a dick if a woman tells them to. But I hope to become as prolific as you. I'm doing one or two a month to start, and even doing that can be a challenge because there's only so much to say, I find. But I am awed and amazed at those of you who do several a week. It's just mind-boggling. And also, it's reassuring to hear that you're having the same endless technical difficulties that I'm having, even though you've been at this for much, much longer. It makes me feel so much less awkward. So thank you for sharing that and not hiding it. I do plan to stick with it this time, and I always will put this for free on major podcasting platforms and on YouTube, even though I could always use more money, unlike some of the folks who lock content behind a paywall. Anyway, rather than take over more of your show, I'll just say it's nice to talk to you again, and perhaps we can have more non-synchronous conversations in the future.
racist, Madge Weinstein, lesbian. Just get the fog out. I just noticed a truck that says get the fog out, and it's some, it says broken windows, defogging procedure and stuff like that. But the, it says get the fog out, and the O in fog is a picture of a coronavirus. I don't know, what do you call that? A molecule? A thingy? A virus chunk? Piece of duty? But it's just weird to see. I don't like to see that. Oh my goodness. So, it's a Monday morning for me. I woke up. I got set to my computer because I took Friday off, which means I'm always, whenever I take Friday off, that means I really didn't take a day off, because that means I have to do Friday's work on Monday. So usually I would come outside and record before. I know the wind is horrible. I'm sorry. I can't. I'd like to record inside, but I just can't. I can't. So I... vagina. Girdle. The thing is, audience, yeah, so I had to go online and see what, you know, otherwise I'd just be thinking, oh, what kind of tremendous shit pile is going to come for me when I get home. So I checked that, and then I had to work for like an hour, and now I'm taking my podcast break now. So that's really wonderful. And, right. And meanwhile, it's windy, so I'm trying to find a place to stay out of the wind. Oh. I think I mentioned before, my best friend from college is very sick with a stage 4 cancer. I called her last week, no answer, and I called her yesterday, and she was so weak. It's just horrible. hopefully she doesn't have to work anymore. They kept making her work to pay for her bills, and that's the sickest fucking shit. I don't understand it. You know, I was thinking about, this thought has been sort of obsessing me. You know, I fully agree with wearing masks and all that shit, obviously, but I want to know. I guess I have this thought in my head, and I'm wondering, like, all the people that are shaming people for not wearing masks and saying things like, you know, you have to wear a mask to protect other people's health. Is it reasonable to assume that all of those people support Medicare for All and demand it of their politicians, particularly the president, their presidential candidate? It should be reasonable to assume that, but I have a feeling it's not, considering that hardly anyone voted in the DNC to put Medicare for All on the platform. So what I'm wondering are these people who were sort of, you know, and rightly so, explaining, you know, righteously explaining that they should wear masks. Everybody should wear masks, not to protect their own health, but to protect other people's health. Are those people consistent in their healthcare beliefs by demanding that anybody they vote for has to support Medicare for All? Because isn't that just a much broader extension of the same idea, that it's our, every human's, not right, necessity. We all have to protect everybody's health. I mean, it's an altruistic idea that I should wear a mask to protect other people's health, and a very good one. But why not extend that to the long term and say, well, we have to protect other people's health, so everybody should have health care. But you see, if you're supporting Biden and not demanding that he support Medicare for All to earn your vote, then I think there's an inconsistency there. And I don't like to tell people how to vote. I'm not going to tell you how I'm going to vote. I mean, look, I'll just be honest with you. And this is at the risk of being a hypocrite, and I am all the time. I'll probably vote for him. But I will not persuade anyone to vote for him. I will not. I will not make even the slightest attempt to persuade you to vote for him in any other way. In any way. In fact, I might even more persuade the opposite. Until he supports Medicare for All. If he supports Medicare for All, I'll be like, yeah, vote for this motherfucker. Get rid of Trump, okay? All that. But the reality of it is, yeah, I'll probably vote for Biden myself. I'll probably pull that lever for him, or that virtual, whatever the fuck it is. I probably will. Am I proud of that? I'm not sure. I'm not sure. But that's what I'm probably going to do. That's my personal politics. And it's personal. I just share it with you because I want to. But, and some of you might say, well, Madge, if you're not telling your fans to vote for Biden, then you're telling them to vote for Trump. Yeah, but now, then you do a podcast. You know what I mean? I haven't heard anybody make that argument, but, you know, then, you know, then if you don't have a podcast, that means you're telling a million people not to vote for Trump, or you're telling a million people to vote for Trump because you don't have a fan base of a million telling them to vote for Biden, which none of this makes sense, and I'm giving myself kind of a brain aneurysm at too early in the morning. Oh, my God. I don't know. So, I wish we could move that along. I truly believe... Listen to Matt Taibbi's podcast. It's great. They had Robert Gallo on there. I don't know what the fuck he was talking about. So smart. The guy who allegedly discovered the AIDS virus. They're talking about... He's been talking about how he thinks this polio vaccine, which already exists, could be used to, as a short-term inoculation against coronavirus. I wish I understood. I wish my brain worked better. But it don't. So I would love it if somebody, maybe with an actual scientific background who listens to this show, could give me a sort of a dumb explanation. Explain how, I just don't get it. It sounds like there might be money involved, that the people that are trying to get vaccines to work are doing it because they're kind of ignoring things that might not earn a profit. So a short-term polio vaccine is used to inoculate against coronavirus might not be being fully explored because there's not as much potential for revenue. I don't know. He wouldn't commit to that. Matt was asking him about it, and it's just not quite clear. I'm just checking, make sure I'm recording. I'm also going to change some settings on these grums. So if today's grum sounds different, I'm going to let me know. Better, worse, that kind of thing. I use filters, so I'm going to try and take away filters in my DAW, my digital audio workstation, is to play with it. So that was great to hear that message from Viola. I have to think about it because I can't remember her latest name. I didn't recognize your voice. I mean, I recognized the voice. First I thought, oh, what a beautiful voice. And then I thought, oh, gosh, I wonder what audio setup. I still want to know what audio. I would like to know what mic you're using and what interface you're using and what software and any filters. Preamp, love to know. Really would love to know that. Because I think you had a fantastic quality, both your natural voice and also the processing of it, which is cool because you're an artist, so you're very precise. A good artist is very good at execution, and she is. She knows how to execute ideas, which is the difference between a good artist and a shitty artist. I mean, because a shitty artist can have great ideas, but maybe not as much of a perfectionist in execution. She is. Except for when she hired me as her videographer, almost 20 years ago to the day, I suppose. She hired me to do other people's mirrors, the movie as a videographer. I had no skill, and I guess that's why she hired me. I mean, and I swear I'm the worst videographer. It was just like, my camera just shakes. It's like if you hire your Bell's, not Bell's palsy, what's that thing? Parkinson's grandma to shoot a film for you. That's how bad my videography is. It's horrible. So, I always felt kind of bad. I thought, well, this movie could have been much better if she hired somebody who, like, actually knew videography. It's weird that I was really into videography when I'm so bad at it. And then I did it in the porno industry, and I think I got better because I realized how awful I was, but I'm still bad. That's not true. I'm actually really good at filming the porno. But I don't do it anymore. But I kind of miss it. But that is fucking hard work. And the smell, ugh. But, anyways, great to hear from you. Really great. And the DID thing, well,
I guess I kind of assumed you always had it. I've known people with DID or what its various names. And, you know, my view on psychology, I've always felt that psychological diagnosis is very primitive. We're in the dark ages of psychology. So, you know, I never put too much faith in the DSM-5 or whatever. And, you know, I've known people that, you know, I wouldn't say have DID, but they would say they're multiple personality or whatever. But then I also love the movie Sybil, which is more like the sort of totally different from people I've known who have it. And I, in other words, I guess I've never been one to think about it much or judge it. And it's kind of always seemed to me, as not one of them, that the people with DID, it's kind of like there's this fuzzy line between creativity and this so-called personality disorder. And I have a hard time calling it a disorder because in the same way that, I don't know, like, it's a disorder in the way I suppose it affects you living in society, but I don't have it, so I'm not one to talk. But as a bipolar disorder, similarly, like Jonathan Winters had that, and he was so fucking creative, and he never took lithium because, you know, and I think Robin Williams might have been one too, I don't know, and they were good friends. But I just, I guess I want to say in the humblest way, I'm not surprised. I mean, you had different names, different personalities with those names. And you know, the fact that they were artistic personas never really, I guess that doesn't really seem to matter because you're an artist. So your artistic personality is your persona. I don't know. I guess I didn't really think about it too much. I'm like, okay. But you're one of those people. I don't know. Do I have to call you by this new name? It's so weird. But okay, Will. I don't want you to, like, have all your friends dismember my social media presence, even though I've already been canceled many times. That's why I am where I am. God, I wish I didn't have to work. But I need that pain. You want to be productive. You say you're jealous, not jealous, envious of me for being able to do three shows a week. Well, for years, I didn't. If you want to do three, if you want to be productive, just get a job you hate. Just get a day job you hate. And it'll force you to do things you like in the little tiny bit of time that you have. That's my secret. Just get a job you hate, preferably in a beige cubicle. Sit in a beige cubicle. And then, believe me, you'll find time to be creative doing my work. But so, I thought of writing. So, this is great that you responded to my request for asynchronous communication, if that's what we call it. I always think of that word in terms of modems, but okay. But I was going to reply to your email, which enclosed that MP3 and sort of, or maybe it might have been an MP4. I don't know. I was going to write you with sort of a context, because there's a context to what I was talking about with respect to this person I was dealing with on Twitter who was kind of against masks, that I wanted to indicate my context, but because sometimes I have to sort of beat around the bush on this show and not say things directly for reasons of, well, it's tricky. So I thought, well, I should just give you the context privately, but then that really defeats the purpose of what we're trying to do here, and that's not fair to the audience other than you. My point is just this. The reason I was trying to be understanding of this person who totally disagreed with me, who I feel was wrong about masks and whatnot, is not because I was trying to be this goody-goody person who gets along with everyone and peace and a Buddhist or whatever, and you know, Noam Chomsky, that doesn't make sense, not her. But I had no altruistic motives. The whole purpose of me engaging this person was because I know more than one person like this in my real life. And I want to know how to deal with that person. And I want to know how I can get along with that person, stay friends with that person, even though they have views that I vehemently disagree with. And the reason I chose this rando person on Twitter to discuss is because I know people like this person in real life with almost the exact same opinion, and I don't know how to manage it, because my strategy is mainly just to not talk about it, but sometimes it comes up anyway. And I'm just trying to think, I really want to believe that there's some way that I can convince these people of that, to change their mind, because I feel like it's dangerous to go around. Like, there were these big, since I recorded that, there have been these big marches in Berlin against masks, and I think there were like 15,000 people, I don't know the number of people, marching, you know, like by that big, where the Love Parade used to be, with that big gold bird in the sky thing, Freedom Lady, Nazi Lady, whatever, and by the Brandenburg Gate, and there, you know, masses of people with no masks saying, you know, masks are oppressive and they're ruining the economy and all these, there's echo chambers in various social media. I'm not going to just say Facebook. Okay, fine. I don't like that argument. I don't want to focus on Facebook, because then I get into this, is Facebook worse than Twitter? Okay, forget it. Let's just assume it's all the same shit. But echo chambers must be causing these talking points, because I see the same ones, that masks are oppression, that they are, they're enslavement, they represent this and that, and they're control, and they want to control us, and it's ruining the economy. But the problem is, staying home is ruining the economy. But I was listening to an NPR interview with a Nobel Prize winning economist, Paul Romer, and he just makes so much sense. If you ever read this guy, he just said, you know, you really can't talk economics about this right now until you get rid of the disease. So you can do all this shit, but, you know, the only thing you can do is you can make people suffer less during the disease, but you can't repair the economy until the disease is gone. You just can't. So what you can do is you can distribute income so that people don't suffer, so that people can still eat and have medical care. But what you can't do is try and, like, fix the economy and stimulate the economy in a pure business way, because it's not going to work. You're just throwing money in the garbage because the disease is still there. In fact, you're just going to throw money away. But in any case, okay, so all that aside, those are logical arguments. And then the guy in Mexico gave me a long list of, like, 31 doctors who support his point that says masks are bad and all this. And I look through it, and first of all, it's all that medical kind of peer review language. I don't understand it. That's not my language, right? I was talking to Reagan about it. He's like, yeah, okay, so maybe a few doctors are wacky, but there's a doctor that Trump quotes who's a witch doctor that believes in demon sperm. She's a doctor. So, you know, not all. Basically, he said 95% of the doctors are right. I don't know how to have these fucking arguments, because I'm humbled to admit I don't fucking understand those scientific studies. I just fucking don't. Maybe, Viola, you do. I know you're very smart with that shit, but I just don't. And I don't have time for it. But my point is that the reason I'm trying, I really do believe there's a way to convince people of the right point of view, but I think it requires a great deal of kindness and mellowing out. And I don't agree that the shutout thing that you're talking about, where you just, you know, shut somebody down, they're stupid, block them, they're idiots. You know, that's your new thing. That's my old thing, right? I guess I've been menopausal my whole life. I'm also much older than you, way past menopause. So maybe we're just at different stages in our life, but I don't think the shutting down works at all. I think it makes it worse. And I think that that's what's happened in our culture with social media, is it makes it so easy to shut off the other side, and then we just have these other sides that get more and more separate, and that just creates war. You know, that's just bad. And I'm very left-wing when it comes to ideas like healthcare and stuff. I'm not talking about compromising on that, but I just feel like people have to get along. I mean, I have friends who are Republican. I have friends who are vehemently anti-mask and don't agree with that. I had a friend once a long time ago when I was probably in high school, and she said, "Are you racist?" I said, "No." She said, "Do you have any friends who are racist?" I said, no. She said, well, then you're probably racist, which doesn't really make sense. And I'm probably not even remembering it right. But I think her point was you have to be friends. If your racism is a sort of a mindset where you close out certain types of people, and if you're closing out people who disagree with you, it's not racism, but it's sort of the same kind of fundamental idea, maybe. I mean, Viola, if that is your name today, I severely respect your thoughts. I've always found you extremely intimidating because you're so smart. And I've never felt that intellectually I could come anywhere close to where you were at. And, you know, I just fake it. I just have, you know, you're way over my head. So you could be totally right here. I'm just telling you what I think. But I don't think that, at least from where I'm standing, that separation, that sort of cutting off the person and saying they're stupid is particularly helpful. Because I don't think they're stupid. I guess I really don't. Because the people I know who are of this mindset, they're not stupid. They're just kind of like caught in propagandistic echo chambers. And if you call everyone in an echo chamber stupid, then that's like most of America. Because, like, I mean, you know, I mean, I know you're the same way as me, where you don't really, from what I understand and reading, because I deleted my Facebook over a year ago, but I finally, this is what's so synchronistic about your sending me this message, is that, you know, my Facebook has been disabled since April of 2019, and I re-enabled it Friday after my friend Stacey Herbert re-enabled hers, and I'm like, well, fuck, if Stacey's like the person that I kind of was modeling my boycott of Facebook after, now she's back on there. I'm like, well, maybe I'll try it. And I turned it on, and you were like the first person I saw, and I hadn't seen you in social media in so long, because I guess since your divorce, I just don't see you anywhere. Or maybe it's because of Facebook. I don't know if it's because of my divorce from Facebook or your divorce from your husband, but it just seemed like you were gone. And then I saw your post about that woman you mentioned who, you know, said whatever that she... you mentioned that insult she said, and I can't remember it because I'm so old. But and then the other thing was you also talked about your opinions on the election, how you're going to vote third party, and fuck you if you don't agree with me or whatever, which, you know, I fully support that. I think people should vote for whoever the hell they want to, and nobody should really tell somebody else how to vote. And, you know, telling somebody, you know, or whatever, I fully support that. But my point is that if you look at all the people... So what I'm trying to say is you and I are alike, I assume, in our attitudes about, for example, Medicare for All. So if you look at all the people who don't support Medicare for All, like I was making a point earlier, all the people that want everyone to wear a mask but they don't support Medicare for All, they're in an echo chamber too. Are they stupid? No, they're just propagandized. So I see a difference. I really do. I don't think people that propagandized are necessarily stupid. I really don't. And can that barrier be broken through? I don't know, but like when I ended that conversation with that guy from Mexico last week, having it be positive, like a friendly closure, felt meaningful to me. Felt like there was hope. Whereas a door slammed shut, and it has a lot to do with the cancel culture stuff too, means people just are going to dig their feet into the ground and stay more... they're going to dig in deeper. And a really good example, and I would strongly recommend it, I talked about on the show not long ago, is Glenn Greenwald's article on The Intercept about his desire to do a documentary with Martina Navratilova. I would strongly recommend you read that article. Because he talks about how she was canceled, and in a way, that's what we are talking about, I think. She was canceled, and then it made her even more extreme and have even dumber opinions because she was so alienated. So... I just don't know. I think this is a great thing to talk about. And I'm so glad that you contacted me. That made my day. And these things, this is why I love going back to this format. That would make me so happy. And we've known each other for 20 years. I think it's just wonderful that you care what I think, to the point where you're even going to listen to this show is amazing to me. And I'm really excited to listen to your podcast. I love the abuse of straight cis men, even if they want it. It's just a wonderful thing. I love that whole idea of bondage and, you know, torturing people who ask for it. I mean, obviously, you're not going to do it without consent, but straight men in America is something else. I remember when I was in Berlin interviewing a dominatrix who owns a club. I can't remember the name of it. She used to work at the Cape Cod Club. And I interviewed her, and she said, the thing is about American men, they always want to get fucked up the ass. It's this weird power thing. Like, American men just are given so much power that they just hate themselves for it, and they have to get tortured. And I guess that's your job. And I think that helps. I really do. I think that helps. I don't know if your BDSM stuff is all virtual, or if, I suppose it is now with Corona, but I say bravo to that. That's a fucking service to America. And I'm going to listen to that show. I hope it does really well, because we need more of that. I mean, that's good stuff. Maybe I'll even play a clip of it sometime. Anyway, again, this is an asynchronous communication grum. Not really anything else, I guess, to say. I have to go to work now and hate my life for the day. And I guess that's about it, really. I have to urinate. So, yeah, all right. Well, maybe I'll play other clips or voicemails. I don't know what I have for you. But this is the end of my recording. Shalom.
Do your youngsters ever ask you, what did you do before television was invented? Now, sometimes it's hard to answer that question in a way that they'll understand. Of course, we read. And we played out in the fresh air a lot more, or at least that's what we tell the kids. But maybe there's another answer. Ask them to come in now and listen to these wonderful bits of imaginative trivia.
Have you tried Wheaties? They're whole wheat with all of the bran.
They're gone strong, the all-American boy.
Wave the flag for Hudson High, boys. Show them how we stand. Ever shall our team be champions, known throughout the land.
Wheaties, breakfast of champions, bring you the thrilling adventures of Jack Armstrong, the all-American boy. Jack Armstrong is climbing up the dangerous mountain trail to the cave of the glacier. High above him, the towering peaks of the Andes press their eternal snows against the South American sky. And far below lies the valley with its hotel of winter sports. Jack and his friends are seeking Whisper, whom the enemy agent Lazaro has captured and brought to the cave of the glacier. Right now, Uncle Jim leads the way with Senor Quesada, the secret service man whom they rescued from the enemy agents, and Jack and Billy and Betty follow not far behind.
Did I hear one of the kids mention our old friend, the Lone Ranger? He was there and held us just as captivated as television's version.
The Lone Ranger!
Hi-yo, Silver!
A fiery horse with the speed of light, a cloud of dust, and a hearty hi-yo, Silver! The Lone Ranger! With his faithful Indian companion, Tonto, the daring and resourceful masked rider of the plains led the fight for law and order in the early western United States. Nowhere in the pages of history can one find a greater champion of justice. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear. From out of the past come the thundering hoofbeats of the great horse, Silver. The Lone Ranger rides again.
Come on, Silver. Let go, big fella. I am Silver. Hooray!
Thank you. and there was a famous dog called King.
It's Yukon King, swiftest and strongest lead dog of the Northwest, breaking the trail for Sergeant Preston of the Northwest Mounted Police in his relentless pursuit of lawbreakers.
On King! On, you hussy! Oh!
Of course, at times, things did get melodramatic.
The following day found the inspector pacing the floor of his office at the Lake LaBarge headquarters, and Yukon King paced at his side. Both the man and the dog were worried.
The men should be back, King. They should have returned some time ago. King, I think I hear men singing. King.
Standing at the open door with Yukon King, the inspector saw a column of men riding four abreast emerging from the pine forest. The scarlet tunic seemed to blaze in the orange light of the setting sun. The men sat straight and proud in their saddles, and even the horses held their heads high, as if they, too, felt the glory of victory.
The maple leaves are emblem, dear. The maple leaves forever. God save our queen and heaven bless. The maple leaves forever.
Alan, Harper!
Yes, ma'am!
All right. Hold on, easy boy.
The inspector patted King's head and said,
"He's back, King."
Hello, Inspector.
Hello, King. Good work, boy.
We're both glad to see you, Sergeant.
Sir, the Indians have been subdued.
Well done, Sergeant. The Yukon still belongs to the Crown. This case is closed.
And here's another old friend who entertained the younger set.
Harry and the Pirates.
Quaker Puffed Wheat Sparkies brings you Terry and the Pirates.
Do you remember I Love a Mystery, The Green Hornet? And, of course, there were many, many more.
Gentlemen of the jury, you are the judges of evidence to be laid before you. Be just and fear not, for the true administration of justice is the foundation of good government.
Famous jury trials, dramatizations of cases taken from actual court history. The names of persons and places have been altered to protect the identity of those concerned.
The United States versus Captain Jacob Thorne.
Early on the morning of March the 17th, 1919, the whaling ship Quantic sailed out of New Bedford, Massachusetts. Baghdad, Martinique, Singapore. At all the places of the world where danger and there you will find Steve Mitchell on another dangerous assignment.
Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons, is based on the novel Mr. Keene.
And now, Gangbusters presents the case of the heartless harborer who lived by shielding the guilty until a boardwalk bucker and a pair of dumbbells helped pierce his armor.
Gangbusters, the only national program to bring you authentic police case histories. Gangbusters, presented in cooperation with police and federal law enforcement departments throughout the United States. Gangbusters, in America's crusade against crime.
Oh,
Wilbur Wise presents Suspense.
This is the man in black, here to introduce this weekly half hour of Suspense.
As a contrast to terror, we also had adventure.
Oh, no. What evil lurks in the hearts of men? The shadow knows.
The shadow, Lamont Cranston, a man of wealth, a student of science, and a master of other people's minds, devotes his life to righting wrongs, protecting the innocent, and punishing the guilty. Cranston is known to the underworld as the Shadow. Never seen, only heard, his true identity is known only to his constant friend and aide, Margot Lane. Today's story, Death Stalks the Shadow.
Mallory's in the end cell, Mr. Murdoch. Just talk to him through the bars. You're the last visitor he'll see.
End cell? Right. Hello, Mallory.
Huh?
It's me, kid. Peter Murdoch.
Murdoch. Gee, I thought you'd never get here.
Come on, pull yourself together, Mally.
Yeah, it's easy enough for you to talk. You ain't been sitting here waiting. Every day the chair getting closer.
Now, Mally.
You're testing the current. Listen. Hear that big dynamo turnover? Coming. They're testing it for me. For me.
Shut up.
Murdoch. Did you see the governor?
Yeah, I saw him, yes.
Well? Oh, say something.
There won't be any reprieve, kid. We're licked.
We're licked? That's funny, Murdoch. You ain't in here. You ain't gonna sit in that chair.
I didn't kill anybody, Mally.
Why, you dirty double-crossing rat. Who planned that killing? Who promised I'd never even do time for it? You did.
Well, I didn't figure on the shadow, Mally.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. The shadow. He caught me. He didn't know I was only doing your dirty work for you. I should have told him.
Yeah, but you didn't.
I trusted you. Peter Murdoch, the great lawyer. You said you'd get me off.
I can't win all my cases.
You didn't even try. Throw me to the wolves. So the shadow wouldn't learn the truth about you.
Well, it worked, didn't it?
Yeah. If I could get through these bars, I'd fix you, Murdoch. Anyhow, I can tell the truth about you. I'll sing so loud.
Sing your head off. My reputation is too good. Nobody will believe you.
The shadow might believe me, Murdoch. Suppose I told the shadow who turned Dan Mally from a decent kid into a killer.
Stop dreaming, Mally. This is the death house. Tonight, you're walking right through that door down there, and you're not coming back.
Why, you...
Oh, you'd better forget all about the shadow. So long, Mally.
Come back here! Come back here!
So long, sucker.
Hey, Mally. Mally, any news for you?
Yeah, bad news.
Gee, tough luck, kid.
Yeah, but I ain't through yet. Before they burn me, there's something I gotta do.
God! Hey, God! Where's that tin cup? God! God!
Pipe down, you guys! Pipe down! What's the matter, Mally?
I want to talk to Commissioner Weston. I gotta see him right away.
What for?
He's gotta locate somebody for me. Somebody I want to talk to. Well, don't stand there! Get me Commissioner Weston!
How did you happen to choose this cafe, Lamont?
Well, Margot, this is a place Commissioner Weston showed me, and I had hopes the gaiety might stop my thinking.
What's bothering you?
Today is the 12th, Margot. Young Dan Mally goes to the chair tonight, thanks to the shadow.
But, Lamont, surely you don't regret the shadow's having captured that murderer for the police?
No, not exactly. Mally fired the shot, all right, but I've never felt the case was completely solved. Well, let's forget that.
Oh, Lamont, look, when that waiter started for the kitchen, the door opened without his touching it.
Yes, works by photoelectric ray.
Oh, what's that?
Look each side of the door, Margot. See those chromium fixtures sticking out of the floor? Lights hidden at the top of them?
Yes.
There's a beam of light between those two bulbs. When anyone approaches the door, his body breaks that ray. And whenever the ray is broken, the door opens without touching
it. How clever.
Yes, and convenient. But, Margot, I have sometimes thought it might even prove dangerous to a certain friend of yours.
Whom do you mean?
The shadow.
But I don't understand.
The Shadow can hide himself from the human eye, Margot, but he has a physical being, and the photoelectric beam could detect his presence.
Hush, Lamont. Here comes Commissioner Weston now.
Oh, I see. Well, good evening, Commissioner.
Oh, Preston, how are you? And you, Miss Lane?
Very well, Commissioner Weston.
Won't you join us?
Thanks, but I think not. I'm rather upset tonight.
Well, what's the matter, Commissioner?
Well, Miss Lane, have you ever heard of the Shadow?
The Shadow?
Oh, yes, Margot. You've heard the absurd stories about his great deeds, huh? All poppycock, of course.
I'd give anything to contact the Shadow right this minute.
But why?
A boy named Dan Malley goes to the electric chair tonight with vital information. The only person he'll talk to is the Shadow. It's because I don't know how to find the Shadow, I'm beaten. Well, I won't find him here, so if you'll forgive me, I'll run along. Good night.
Good night, Commissioner Weston.
Good night. Margot, my hunch about Danny's case must be right. Waiter.
Yes, sir.
Waiter, here's money for my bill. Never mind the change.
Thank you, sir.
Come, Margot, quick. I'm going to the death house now. As the Shadow.
Why doesn't he come? Why doesn't he come?
Were you waiting for me, Dan Malley?
Who's that? Who spoke?
The Shadow.
The Shadow?
There isn't much time, Malley. They're coming after you to take you to the chair. Speak quickly. What have you to say?
Plenty.
I can't save you, you know. You killed a man, Malley.
Yeah, I know. But it wasn't my idea, Shadow. Honest, it wasn't.
There was no evidence against anyone else.
Yeah, don't I know it. He's too clever for that.
Who is too clever?
The bird that got me into this. The smart fellow that sold a dumb kid on crime being a good business.
His name?
Peter Murdoch.
Do you know what you're saying, Dan? Murdoch's a famous criminal lawyer. His reputation...
His reps are blind. Listen, Pete Murdoch's the biggest crook in this section. He's got a piece of everything. But right now he's planning a slum fire that'll kill thousands and net him a million from insurance companies.
If you're telling the truth...
A man doesn't lie when he's only got a few minutes to live, Mr. Shadow. The job's going to be pulled late this week.
I'll investigate it, Dan. If it's true, Peter Murdoch will pay for his crimes. But how can I get proof?
That's easy. Now, listen. There's a friend of mine named Dopey Jake, down by the wharves, number 5 South Street. Jake knows enough about Murdoch's latest plan to prove what I said.
I'll see him.
Yeah, listen. If you can get to the filing cabinet in Murdoch's house, there's records and things, enough to finish him.
The Shadow promises justice, Dan Malley.
That's all I want.
They're coming, Dan.
Okay. I can take it. Thanks, Shadow. Thanks for coming.
Well, Dan, it's time.
Yeah. I know, Warden.
Unlock the door, Gus.
Right, Warden. Well, here goes.
Take his arms, Gus.
Very kid.
I ain't scared. I ain't. Not as scared as Murdoch will be. Wait till the Shadow gets him.
All right, men. Forward.
Shadow. Yeah, don't be Jake. They'll fix him.
Goodbye, Malley. Come on, kid. Keep your chin up. So long, Malley.
Dan, the other prisoners are saying goodbye.
So long, boys.
We'll be seeing you, Malley.
Murdoch. Jake. The Shadow.
There was Radio Adventure. So vivid and so good that recently 160 radio stations around the nation have rerun The Shadow, using the original dramatizations for a whole new generation of Americans. I'll be back with more samples of radio's value as entertainment.
Love Big Lips, honey.